The Judiciary Committee will come to order. It is 1:38 on Wednesday afternoon, March 21st, the first day of spring. You can tell it's spring by looking out the window. We have one bill on our committee today, before the committee today, and that is CS for Senate Bill Number 84. We have the bill sponsor with us, Senator Donnie Olson. Senator Olson, if you'd introduce your staff to us and the bill, we'd be more than happy to hear your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Today we have with us Denise Liccioli, who is the person that's been primarily working on the bill that we're going to be discussing, and she certainly is the expert from our office, since she's been dealing not with just people in the state of Alaska, but all throughout the whole nation that have been dealing with this specific and this very sensitive situation, because it does affect many people's lives in tragic ways.
Thank you, Senator Olson. And I should, for the record, state that all members of the committee are present and were present when we began the committee hearing. Senator McGuire, Senator Huggins, Senator Terrio, Senator Wilkowski, myself, Senator French. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 84 mandates that only self-extinguishing cigarettes can be sold in Alaska and establishes the testing and certification requirements to assure that only self-extinguishing cigarettes are sold in Alaska. Although no cigarette can ever be called safe, so-called safe self-extinguishing or fire-safe cigarettes have a increased or have a reduced ignition propensity type of cigarette. These cigarettes are designed to be less likely than a conventional cigarette to ignite a soft furnishing such as a couch or a mattress. The bill also provides for the marking of cigarette packaging in an approved and easily identifiable manner to indicate that they are fire-safe. Cigarettes are the leading cause of home fire fatalities in Alaska and the United States. The most common material first ignited in home fires are mattresses and bedding, upholstered furniture and floor coverings. A typical scenario for fires is when a lit cigarette is either forgotten or dropped by the smoker. The cigarette fire can smolder for hours before it flares up into a full blaze. 1/4 of victims of fire fatalities are not the smokers whose cigarettes started the fire. Over 1/3 of these are children. The risk of dying in a residential structure fire caused by smoking rises with age. 38% of fatal smoking material fire victims are 65 years or older. Today, the most common technology used by cigarette manufacturers for reduced cigarette ignition propensity, RCIP, is to make the paper thicker in places to slow down a burning cigarette. If such a cigarette is left unattended, then when the burn reaches one of the thicker places or speed bumps, the burning will self-extinguish. Self-extinguishing cigarettes meet established fire safety performance standards. Legislation similar to Senate Bill 84 has been enacted in New York, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, California, and Illinois. A fire-safe cigarette mandate has also been approved for all of Canada. This legislation is supported by the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, the Alaska Firefighters Association, the Department of Public Safety, and the Division of Fire Prevention. Senate Bill 84 will save lives as well as reduce injuries and damage to the property in Alaska. I certainly urge you to give favorable consideration to this bill. Part of the reason I'm so interested in this bill is because, as a physician, the times that I saw those heartrending situations where children came into the hospital, especially in the middle of the night after they'd gone to bed feeling safe and there was a fire at home, and to see the smoke rings around their mouth as well as the coughing up of charcoal and the burns on the bottom of the soles of their feet makes it something that you just don't forget. Having to clean that charcoal out of the bottom of the feet is one of those things that at least I will never forget when I had to do it. And so with that, I certainly urge your attention as well as passage of this very sensitive legislation.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Questions for Senator Olson from members of the committee? Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.
We do have a good raft of folks who are interested in testifying about the bill. Perhaps we should turn to them now and give the public an opportunity to weigh in on the measure. Let's start on the off-nets. I have on the off-nets Mr. Ray Bizzal. I hope I pronounced your name correctly, sir, if you can hear me.
Yes, you did. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. My name is Ray Bizzal. I'm the Western Regional Manager for the National Fire Protection Association, and I am speaking in support of SB 84. I've been working this issue for several years And during this time, as Senator Olson indicated, six states have passed laws similar to the one that you're considering today. And what that adds up to is one quarter of the U.S. population is now protected by this law. And this law, as Senator Olson also indicated, is in effect in Canada, too. Most of the laws in these states have just become effective, and statistics really are not yet available, but in New York, it has been in effect since 2004, and statistics are available for the first 6 months of the law. Studies in New York show that there has been no reduction in cigarette tax revenue as a result of the law. Further, New York Office of Fire Prevention reports a one-third reduction in cigarette-related fire fatalities and an even higher reduction in the number of cigarette-related fires. As I indicated, the statistics beyond the first 6 months are not yet available, but I'm sure that they will continue in that trend. Alaska is not alone in considering legislation for self-extinguishing cigarettes. Today, 22 state legislatures have bills similar to what you're considering. In fact, three of those states, Utah, Kentucky, New Jersey, have passed through the legislature and are on the desks of those governors, the governors in those states waiting to be signed. Consideration of this issue is widespread because it will make a difference. Nearly 1,000 people die each year in the United States needlessly because of fires that are started by cigarettes, injuring many more people and firefighters and causing millions of dollars of property damage. Cigarettes that comply with the fire safety standard mandated by the bill actually reduce the likelihood of fire. Passing this bill will absolutely save lives in Alaska and reduce injuries to people, to firefighters, and reduce property damage. I thank you very much for your consideration, and please support SB 84.
Mr. Bazal, thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Bazal from members of the committee? I don't see any, sir. Thank you so much again for taking time to speak with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Next up is Mr. Warren Cummings in Fairbanks at the Fairbanks LIO. I have Mr. Cummings on the list of folks who'd like to testify. Mr. Cummings, can you hear me, and are you online?
Yes, I can. I'm online. Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. I am president of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association and also the fire chief for the city of Fairbanks. This legislation will save lives in Alaska. Cigarettes are the leading cause of home fire fatalities in the United States, killing 700 to 900 people annually, smokers and non-smokers alike. This is almost four per year in Alaska, and the statistics show us that 37 over the last 10 years have died from fires caused by cigarettes. Smoking materials and structure fires kill 760 people and injured 1,520 people in the United States in 2003. The same year in Alaska, five people died from similar fires. One quarter of the victims, as talked about earlier, of smoking material fire fatalities are not the smokers whose cigarettes started the fire. 34% are children of the smokers. 25% are neighbors or friends of the smokers. 14% are the spouses or partners, and 13% are the parents of the smokers. So it just doesn't affect the smoker himself or herself. It affects the friends and neighbors. NFPA research in the mid-1980s predicted that fire-safe cigarettes would eliminate three out of four cigarette fire deaths. If cigarettes manufactured have been producing only fire-safe cigarettes since then, an estimated 15,000 lives could have been saved by now throughout the United States. Alaska, over the last 10 years, this would have been 27 lives saved. With passage of this legislation, hopefully 10 years from now, we can look back and see that we saved 30 lives. So it's good legislation. On behalf of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, I encourage you to move forward and support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Cummins. Any questions for Mr. Cummins from members of the committee? I don't see any, sir. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come speak with us.
Thank you.
Next up on the off-nets is the Fire Marshal, Rusty Belanger. Mr. Belanger, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Are you there?
Yes, we can hear you. If you put yourself on the record, the committee would be happy to hear your testimony.
You bet. Good afternoon, Chairman French and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rusty Belanger. I am the acting director of the Division of Fire Prevention for the state of Alaska. The Division of Fire Prevention supports the CS Senate Bill 84, proposed by Senator Olson. This bill embodies the focus of the division's mission statement, which is to prevent the loss of life and property from fire and explosion. This bill recognizes significant losses of life and property due to cigarettes. As mentioned before by Warren Cummings, 27 Alaskans have lost lives over the past 10 years. Also, between 96 and 2005, Alaska lost $8 million in property to fires with cigarettes as an ignition source. Just 2 days ago in the city of Anchorage, we lost another one from unattended cigarettes, totaling $40,000. Not quite as significant as $8 million, but it's going to add up in the next list of statistics. It is our belief that this bill will significantly lower fire fatalities in Alaska related to cigarettes, as the manufacturers will have to meet the new requirements for a cigarette that meets a safety standard. This would be at minimal cost to the state. We urge your support on this issue, and I thank you for your time.
Mr. Belanger, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Belanger from members of the committee? Yeah. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Belanger. I don't think I've ever smoked a cigarette in my life, and I like to sleep in rooms that are non-smoking, all those sorts of things, but I still have to ask you, in your statistics on fires, how many of those are attributed to marijuana cigarettes or Prince Albert cigarettes that, I guess, by definition, are roll your own?
That is a good question. And it's actually one I could definitely look into it for you and get you that answer, but we look at it as a cigarette, unattended cigarette, as an ignition source, and I don't know if it's broken down, you know, as far as, like you said, a marijuana cigarette, a cigar. It's unattended smoking or improperly discarded smoking materials. I could look into it further and try to get you an answer if that's acceptable.
Well, it's not a showstopper. We're throwing statistics around. We might as well make sure that if we're going to say that this is going to fix something, that it really is going to fix it, and it's not just going to cut it in half or whatever the number is. But anyway, thank you very much. And I'm not trying to bog you down in minutiae.
No, great question.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Mr. Belanger, perhaps if you come across the answer or can enlighten the committee, you can just send it to us in an email, either to me at my office and we'll distribute it, or to the members of the committee, whichever is easier for you.
You bet. I'll try to see if there is an actual distinguishment between, you know, classifications of what type of cigarette or smoking material was used. You bet.
That'd be great. Any other questions for Mr. Belanger? I don't see any, sir. Thanks again for taking time to testify.
Thank you.
Let's move here to Juneau, where we have Pat Eggers to testify, sign up to testify. Mr. Eggers, if you come forward, put yourself on the record, we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
My name is Pat Eggers with the Alaska State Firefighters Association. I'm the first vice president, and on behalf of the Alaska State Firefighters Association, thank you for hearing this bill. Most of what I had to say has already been said. It's huge legislation that I really believe would save lives, and even if we're going to save one, and I think we could probably save three or four or five a year. It's huge legislation. A lot of information on this is under the firesafecigarette.org website. If you want to look up any of the statistics, a lot of it's there. And NFPA is a huge sponsor of this, a huge backer of this legislation, and they have all the statistics. They make all the rules that we fight fire by, and they are a huge organization. That website is a really good learning tool if you want to look in more in depth into this. And that's basically all I have to say.
Wonderful. Do any members of the committee have questions for Mr. Eggers? Sir, I don't see any. Thanks so much for coming out to testify today.
Thank you, sir.
Next up is Mr. Bob Evans, who is here in the audience. Mr. Evans, if you come forward, put yourself on the record, we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robert Evans. For the record, I'm a lobbyist for Altria Corporation. PMUSA has been working with the National Firefighters for several years in trying to come up with legislation that will work. for both to address the safety issue and, of course, for business consistency for Altria Corporation. In a perfect world, we'd love to see something passed by the Congress and have one uniform standard, but that is, as a practical matter, not going to happen real soon. And so we've been working all over the country with the legislatures and administration and firefighters to try to make this bill happen. So my corporation is in support of this bill as it's drafted.
Thank you very much, Mr. Evans. Questions from the committee? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah. There's a memorandum in here from Michael Williams to Altria Corporate Services. Is that something?
Michael White.
I'm sorry, Michael White. Is that one of your corporate attorneys?
No, Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, Mike White is a partner of mine. I'm of counsel with Patton Boggs. One of the ledge counsel people brought up an issue on the delegation issue, and he's been retained by their outside counsel, Arnold and Porter, to address that issue for you, for the committee.
Thank you. And my understanding is that just reading the conclusion, he did find that the legislature does have the authority to enact this law?
Yes.
Have you looked at the preemption issue at all, or do you know if Altria or any other organization has? Is there any sort of preemption issue?
I'm not aware of any. I believe Mike White is online to answer questions. If he'd probably be the more appropriate person to respond to that.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Evans? Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob, do we run a chance of this beginning be the beginning of an underground market for cigarettes? I mean, are they the same nicotine content? People like them as well. I mean, what's the issue there, or is there an issue?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I don't smoke, so but I am told that there is no difference in taste, that they're basically tasted same as the cigarettes that are not fire safe cigarettes. The chances of underground market it's out there now. I suspect that there's going to be a lot of excess cigarettes. I suspect that the market will at least be the same as it is today. I don't know that this would necessarily increase it.
There's no tax issue. I mean, there's no advantage to what's the shorthand version for these creations?
The fire safe cigarette.
Fire safe cigarette. Okay. There's no money advantage to having a fire safe cigarette next to an unfire safe cigarette because they're both going to cost the same. There's no economic incentive to bring one over the other.
No, not at all. I mean, yeah, exactly right, Mr. Chairman. I think that there isn't any economic advantage at all for in this case.
If you trucked up a load of unfire safe cigarettes. Assuming you pay the same tax. Now the tax issue is a whole different idea. You may have cigarettes that don't have the tax stamp, but it wouldn't revolve around this issue. It would revolve around that one.
Exactly.
I see. Follow-up question, yeah. Senator Huggins.
So in that sense, I mean, people will still have Camels or Lucky Strikes or Marlboros or whatever it is. Yeah. Just a comment. You know, tobacco is one of the craziest things in our society. I mean, the first job I ever had, it was kind of a mule skinner driving a sled in tobacco fields. And we subsidize tobacco at the sales market. The government goes out and marks off the areas, and they come out and check the quality. They're fully entwined in it. And then we have the tobacco settlement, and now we have us figuring out safe cigarettes. It's an oxymoron when you look at the government and tobacco overall, but in any event.
We learned something valuable, yes, about Senator Huggins. Senator Wilikowski.
Do you know if using these cigarettes requires the user to inhale deeper?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't know that. Everything I've been told is that there's no health issues involved with this, but I don't know that at first, my own knowledge.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Evans while he's here? Thank you, Mr. Evans, for your testimony this afternoon. Perhaps the next witness can answer that question. We have Emily Neenan here from the American Cancer Society. Ms. Nina, if you come forward, put yourself on the record. The committee would be happy to hear your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Emily Neenan. I'm the Alaska Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society. And it'll come as no surprise to members of the committee that the American Cancer Society and our partner health agencies always pay attention to any legislation that has the word tobacco in it. But we have, I have looked at this, this bill, and I'm basically here to say we don't have any problem with it. We don't think it affects our mission in preventing cancer one way or the other, but I wanted to let you all know that. I have spoken with a colleague in New York State who worked on, was involved in when New York State first passed this and has been following the ramifications of that. And if you're interested, I'll share with some of
Please.
The responses that were brought up with Mr. Evans. There have been folks who have looked at this issue of and questions about, well, do you have to inhale more deeply to keep the cigarette lit? And that doesn't seem to pan out. There doesn't seem to be any difference. And this is based on my conversation, again, with my colleague in New York State. But so I can't provide documentation to back that up. But generally, among folks in the health fields, that's what we're finding. There really isn't any difference in how the cigarettes are actually smoked or used. I will bring up one thing that I'm sensitive to. There are folks who use a different shorthand term for these and call them self-extinguishing cigarettes. In the last committee hearing, I heard from some of those National Fire Protection Safety Organization. They have an even more accurate, but I do prefer to call them self-extinguishing rather than fire safe because I never like to use safe and cigarette in the same sentence. So, with that, I'll answer any questions if you have any.
Nomenclature noted. Thank you. Questions from the committee. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, I guess the only question that I would be interested in, maybe if you could find out more, if you could direct us to someone that would be able to maybe provide us a little more information, is just this whole concept of do you have to inhale deeply? Because if we're saving five lives, that's a great thing, but if we're endangering all the other thousands of cigarette users in the state because they have to inhale deeper, causing health problems, I would at least, I think that's a judgment call that certainly a fact that I want to be aware of.
I appreciate your concern through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. I can provide more information on that. I don't think it's an issue because I think if it was, I would have been instructed as such. So, and with that, I'd just like to thank Senator Olson for bringing this measure forward.
Wonderful. Thank you. Other questions for Ms. Nina while we have her? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, just, do you by chance know what the percentage of roll your own, the commonly called the Prince Albert guys that roll your own fraternity?
I don't, but I, through the chair, I'd be happy to find out and provide some more information for you on that. My general sense is that it's a pretty small percentage of the market for cigarettes overall. Most.
Yes, you know, as much as I dislike tobacco smoke and understand the hazard of it, I would hate to see our next step go and say, you can't roll your own because we want everybody smoking cigarettes to be self-extinguishing.
That does bring up a question in my mind, and maybe we got it from Senator Olson in his introductory remarks, but if so, maybe we could reiterate it now. What is it about cigarettes that make them continue to burn, and is that if that's something you know about, you can tell us. If not, we can ask another witness, but it does seem like a good time to get it on the record. Senator Huggins' concern about roll your own brings to mind, you know, my dim knowledge of what it is that makes one cigarette fire safe and one cigarette self-extinguishing and so forth. I'm still learning. I just learned something a minute ago. Now I got to change it so quickly. But if you know Ms. Neenan, you can tell us. If not, we'll ask someone
else. I will
else.
Share with you that what I've learned about this, I've learned from the folks at the National Fire Protection Safety Organization. Forgive me if I've gotten that name wrong, but there are other folks that testified previously that can speak a lot more to that. As I understand it, it just has to do with some bans in the paper. But I'm not the technical expert on that fact. That there are other folks that can speak more specifically to the different kind of using a different kind of paper, which stops the cigarette from burning when it hasn't been, when you're not actively smoking it for a period of time.
Yeah, there's actually a picture that shows that.
Wow. We'll look at the picture here.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Neenan.
Other
questions for her? No. Thanks so much. Next up, that completes the witnesses we have here. And we've got three folks online to answer questions, it looks like. Joanna Bales, Terry Bannister, and Michael White. Let's start with you, Ms. Bales. Is that correct? You're here simply to answer questions. You're from Revenue?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Joanna Bales with Department of Revenue, and I am here to answer any questions about this bill because Department of Revenue will have some enforcement obligations with it.
I do see a fiscal note for you. Maybe you can just briefly describe for the committee what Revenue's role will be should this bill become law.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I do believe, and I'm not sure, but I believe that Senator Olson has a CS that he was going to offer for the bill, which actually our fiscal note addresses that CS.
Ms. Bales, thank you for bringing that to my attention, that we do have a CS, a backslash O for Oscar before us. If one of the members of the committee would,
Oscar.
By Senator Huggins' motion, the Oscar draft is before us. Ms. Bales, thank you. If that's the work draft you're referring to, please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a copy of the CS in front of me, but it's my understanding that it removes some sections that deals with a directory that the Department of Revenue maintains. And because that directory language will be removed, the Department of Revenue believes that it will have to maintain an additional directory of cigarettes that are approved for sale in the state. And because of that additional work, we have prepared a fiscal note that actually does have expenses associated with it. We have an expectation that we will have to have at least a part-time person to maintain a separate directory and educate our taxpayers on the differences in the two directories. And just for a brief explanation, one of the senators there mentioned the Cigarette Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement. As part of that agreement, we passed legislation that requires us to maintain a directory right now that identifies those cigarettes that are either compliant with the Master Settlement Agreement or compliant with an escrow statute that we adopted under Title 45. Because of the complexities of the Nationwide Master Settlement Agreement, it's been determined that it's probably best not to make changes to the existing directory and then maintain a separate directory that identifies the fire safe cigarettes. And as I stated, right now our retailers and distributors across the state rely on that directory so they know what cigarettes are legal to stamp in the state. And so we would have to provide them another directory and educate them on exactly which brands that meet both the fire safe requirements as well as the MSA standards, and that is where we have those additional costs. But one of the other things I'd like to identify, though, is that based on the language of this bill, for each cigarette brand that's certified in the state, the manufacturer would have to pay a $250 fee. We expect that there could be upwards of 1,000 different cigarette brands that meet that fire safe requirement that would be certified in the state. And based on that, there would be an expectation that those fees would be approximately $250,000 every 3 years. It's a three-year certification requirement, which would come to about $83,000 each year, which would more than cover our expected cost of approximately $40,000 each year to maintain a directory and educate the public and conduct other enforcement activity under this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Bales. Other questions for Ms. Bales while we have her on the line? Senator Terrio.
I guess I perhaps hear some justification for some one-time costs, but your fiscal note has year-after-year costs that I think are a little bit questionable. I mean, right now, because of the Master Settlement Agreement, you have ongoing education responsibilities with the sellers, and it just doesn't strike me that this is enough of a change to warrant a half-time position, you know, every working day of the year engaged in this activity. So you've got a little bit of a cost in the first year, increased cost, that I guess is part of the setup. Well, it's the equipment here, it looks like. But I don't know that you've given me enough justification that I would think that the year-after-year expense is justified.
Senator Terrio, through the chair, and I understand your concerns about that. In addition to also maintaining directory, I mean, those directories do change. The one that we maintain for the Master Settlement Agreement changes every year. Our expectation is that there will be some changes with the Fire Safe as well, and then also ensuring that we cross-reference those directories, as well as the investigation activity that we would need to conduct to ensure that the Fire Safe cigarettes are the only ones that are being stamped, seizure of the cigarettes, destruction of the cigarettes. And one of the other concerns that we have, dealing specifically with the directory, is that someone could mistakenly stamp cigarettes that are on one directory and yet not on another, and we could potentially have some legal costs associated with that during an appeal or possibly a court proceeding.
Follow-up question, Senator Terrio.
Well, I'll leave it to finance, and the sponsor of the bill is a member of finance to look at this, but it just seems to me that some of that is just normal, everyday business of the state, and I just don't know that we should be building in the expectation that this money is going to be available. So
I'm sure the sponsor will have a forthright discussion about that up at the finance table. Thank you, Senator. Other questions for Ms. Bales while we have her on the line? I don't see any. Thank you so much, Ms. Bales. Next up is Terry Bannister. Ms. Bannister, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much. If you'd put yourself on the record, I'd like to discuss the memorandum that you issued a couple of days ago to the sponsor.
This is Terry Bannister, and I'm a legislative counsel.
Thank you, Ms. Bannister. And the questions I have are around a memorandum dated March 19, 2007 that all of the members of the committee should have. And you flagged three issues, if you will, in the bill. And if you would, let's take them from bottom to top. I'd like to start with the interstate commerce issue. Could you just describe, just so the record's clear here in the Judiciary Committee, what your observations are with respect to the bill and its interaction with the interstate commerce clause?
Essentially, whenever you have a bill that will affect any kind of interstate commerce, and in this case, you'll have cigarettes coming over, being bought and purchased and brought in from other states or sold by people from other states, it raises the issue whether or not this is, it places a burden on interstate commerce, which the U.S. Constitution prohibits if it goes too far. And so if the question is going to be whether it imposes an undue burden or it's clearly excessive, the burden is clearly excessive on the commerce that's going back and forth versus the benefits you're going to reap. So if the benefits are really incredibly good and it's not going to put much burden on the interstate commerce, then it will be fine. So I don't have enough information to be able to really evaluate that, but I wanted to bring it up as an issue. It may be just fine, but you have to consider that every time.
Just for my own edification, were you able and did you do any research into whether a similar bill from a different state has been challenged on those grounds by, I'm assuming, one of the tobacco companies?
No, I have not.
Okay, thanks so much. We've got another witness who may be able to talk about that when we get to him. Next is civil penalties. Could you address your observations with respect to that aspect of the bill?
Right. You can put Well, the legislature can impose civil penalties as opposed to a criminal penalty, like a misdemeanor or a felony, on activity, mainly as a regulation to regulate and make sure things go the way that the statute wants them to go. But if the amount that's imposed is way beyond, is too high, then it will be considered, this amount will be considered that the legislature actually thought that this was, they're trying to condemn it, really condemn it, and it thought it was criminal. And in that case, all the protections that accrue to a criminal penalty will accrue to the civil penalty, you know, right to counsel, all those things. So you try to keep, most of the court will defer in large, to a large degree to what the legislature finds, you know, that this is a civil penalty and what it's for and that this isn't too much. But you have to keep them, and also they'll evaluate whether how large they, it is in the particular situation. And I really don't have any idea in this particular situation of what would be too much, because I know it's a large market, so maybe a large penalty is appropriate. But it's just one of those issues that follows along with these.
Thank you, Ms. Bannister. And we may ask the next witness whether that's been a problem in other states, because I'm guessing you haven't had...
No, I haven't.
Same. But that does bring us to the delegation issue, and it's... I saved it to last because I'd like you to address your observations and your concerns in the bill with respect to delegation.
Well, basically, the legislature can delegate its authority to make laws, like to make regulations, to the people in the executive branch, or it can that type of thing, as long as, but it has to do so, has certain limitations. For example, if you're going to delegate regulation authority to someone in the Department of Commerce, you have to give them, you say you want them to make regs, but you have to give them criteria to go by. They don't always have to be extensive, you know, but you have to tell them, you have to guide them, or else you're improperly delegating your authority. You're just saying, go do it. We're not going to tell you how, but just go do it. In this case, we have effectively a delegation of authority, of legislative authority, in the sense that we are saying in three sections, in varying degrees, that the law of New York should be followed, or most of the time it's should be followed or should be persuasive authority. And these sections are qualified or whatever. But what we're doing is we're saying that we're going to go by what New York legislators, New York officials, their laws and regs do. And in that way, there's a question arises on whether or not, in that particular situation, the legislature is exceeding its authority in doing that. Now, I'm saying it's an issue, and I'm not saying these sections would fail because of how they're written now. But it is an issue, and one of the reasons underlying the issue is when you give, the court has stated in the past, in dicta, not in as a holding, but stated that one of their concerns is that people won't have an opportunity to comment, like citizens of the state won't have an opportunity to comment or get notice of the changes, let's say, that New York does. Now, there has been a big trend, not a big trend, but this seems to be the federal government doesn't even pay attention to this delegation issue. Our state has, in varying ways, seems to allow some delegation, like acknowledgement of reference to amended, like federal laws, to be okay, and they've even mentioned some private organizations that's okay. But there's still that language hanging out there, and because this is unusual, I haven't really seen another bill that I've done. There may be others where there's been any concept of delegating to allowing another state's activities to affect what we do as directly. So it's an issue, and I'm not saying, once again, I'm not saying that, I don't know what the court will do, because so after it gave the information, the comment about wanting people to have notice and opportunity to comment, and this was with regard to private, delegating private to private organizations. This was like a building code. Amendments, later amendments made to the building code by a private organization. Then in a subsequent case, it said delegating to private organizations has been okay. And I don't. And it was in the same year that this whole thing, same judge, same year. I don't know how they would react. So what I'm mainly saying is that I think there's an issue. It's unusual. I think it's an issue, and I just wanted the legislature to be aware of it.
Thank you, Ms. Bannister. Questions for Ms. Bannister about the last point, about the delegation point? I think, I'm sorry, Senator Terrio, please go ahead.
Yes, can you tell me, was there a reason why you didn't write the specific sections from the New York law into this says statutes? If the problem is that, well, we might agree with the New York law right now, but then they go about their business and they make a change. Our citizens don't have access to make comment on the changes. Why would we not just adopt their similar language into our statutes right now?
Well, I think that would be one way to help avoid this problem or help alleviate it. But in a couple, one or two places, I think it looks like it's going to be at least, let's see, I don't know the reason for that this has not been done, but I have the feeling that the idea is to capture what happens in the future, what other decisions are made also, how it's interpreted. It's particularly the last section in 220 says that the implementation of the standards established by New York will be persuasive authority. So that's kind of, it embodies future, I see it as embodying future decisions.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, it certainly makes sense to me, and it's my understanding that the manufacturers are looking for consistency across the country. They're not getting it out of the Congress, and so they're making a suggestion that we all refer to one state. And I guess I do see some benefit for having consistency. So,
I sense the tension as well, but it does seem odd to make explicit references to the laws of the state of New York, and just to sort of give up, if you will, our decision making authority to that body, and to let them lead us on the subject. Other comments on this subject, Senator McGuire.
One thought might be, Mr. Chairman, to replace the word shall on line 12 with the word may.
Which page?
Page 9, under the implementation section that we're discussing. Line 12, it says, shall be persuasive authority. And what we might say instead is may be persuasive authority, so that we give a nod to, and the legislative record reflects that we are looking for consistency for the manufacturers. However, shall is pretty strong.
Senator Wilikowski.
I think section 220 is probably unconstitutional, and I have some serious concerns about linking anything that we do to another state. I think it's something that we, if we want to address, use the New York statute, then we should probably just put that in here, because I think this section is probably unconstitutional.
Senator McGuire.
Okay, and just to follow up, I didn't get a, and maybe the bill's sponsor could answer, because Ms. Bannister couldn't, why not just simply adopt, and I'm directing this to Senator Olson, why not just adopt the New York model as opposed to specifically referencing it in an implementation clause?
Senator Olson.
Unusual.
And for the committee's information. The next witness, Michael White, who wrote a memo on this topic, is next up. So if you're if you want to crack at this question, we'd be happy to hear your answer.
We'd be glad to go ahead and give you our preliminary response to this, but there is the issue that has been brought up by that, and I'd like to hear what the next witness has to say before we go ahead and give you what the reasons we crafted the bill in the way we did.
Wonderful. Other questions for Senator Olson while we have him here? If not, let's turn to Mr. White. Mr. White, are you on the line?
I am.
If you go ahead and put yourself on the record and your affiliation, we'd be happy to hear your views on this topic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michael D. White, and I'm a partner with the law firm of Patton Boggs. Our client is Atria Company, which is, I understand it, is the parent company of PMUSA.
And PMUSA is Philip Morris?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You're more familiar with that organization, I think, than the members of the committee. Thank you. Please go ahead.
We were asked by our client to take a look at this legislation, in particular in relation to the issues raised by legislative counsel regarding what she considered to be a potential issue with the unconstitutional delegation. Our review of the statutes and authorities in this area unequivocally indicate that there is no constitutional issue at all. There is no delegation problem here. As I understand it, Mr. Chairman, you have a copy of the memorandum that I have provided to, or that was provided to the committee, but let me touch just a couple of major points before opening it up to any questions that the committee members might have.
Sure, please go ahead.
First of all, if we were back in the 1930s, then there may be an issue of this whole delegation concern. But since for the past 50 to 60 years, the courts have routinely upheld the type of legislation that you're dealing with here. And while it is true, there is this concept in the law of delegation. Really, anymore, what it means in the law is that you can't have complete abdication rather than delegation. Because as you legislators would know more than perhaps the average citizen, our government couldn't work unless you were able to delegate some of your authority to the other branches of government to do the regulation and the other things that, are done on a daily basis as part of state, local, and federal government. So if you look at the case law that interprets these statutes, you will see that other than one very extremely large delegation of authority, which basically gave the governor the right to simply rewrite the budget at his own discretion, every single challenge based on a delegation in the courts of Alaska has been routinely rejected from the 1960s forward. And if you look at the specific examples of the type of things that are required under this statute, basically what it does is it delegates your authority to the fire marshal under the statute and then requires him in certain circumstances to look to implement his decisions by making the authority from the state of New York a deciding or a persuasive factor. And that's done in the three instances of the sections 40B, 120B, and 220. If you look within those standards, are in fact the standards necessary for the fire marshal to appropriately do his job so that there is no unlawful delegation because the court has said there's a sliding scale analysis that has to be done. And the broader the delegation there are, i.e., the closer you get to abdication, the more scrutiny the court will give that delegation. And when you're dealing here with a very specific topic in an area that is of some expertise, which this obviously is, I don't think anybody, including myself, fully understand how these cigarettes are supposed to work. I don't claim to be an expert on that. But I do know that if this statute as written is an unlawful delegation, then you, Katie, bar the door, because every, there's probably, I won't say every, that might be an exaggeration, but a significant portion of the laws passed by the legislature would then be unlawful delegations. And you can go down to a litany of lists, everywhere from the Alaska Wage and Hour Act to the federal tax laws to the antitrust laws to various laws dealing with probate, where the legislature has delegated and adopted implicitly laws from other jurisdictions as binding upon the state of Alaska.
Mr. White, why don't we hold right there and take a couple of questions before we go past this point, and I have Senator Huggins. Senator Wilikowski's next.
Thank you. I guess I don't have a big problem delegating some of the authority to the fire marshal. I do have a problem delegating to things that are being done in another state. And I'm looking at your memo, which you filed, and I appreciate that. That's been very helpful. But all the references for delegation in your memo are references, as far as I can tell, that are to federal code. You reference the Federal Trade Commission Act. You reference the Uniform Federal Lien Registration Act. You reference the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Uniform Probate Code Act. Are you aware of any Alaska legislation that references that we shall use another state as persuasive authority?
In terms of the state of Alaska, there is no difference between the federal government and a state government. They are both foreign governments vis-a-vis the legislative authority that exists under the sovereign state of Alaska. To answer specifically your question, there's a number of uniform acts that are not federal legislation. They're uniform, like the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act, which is promulgated not by the federal government or any particular state, but by a, if you will, industry association. Uniform Probate Code is not a federal law. It's actually, once again, a law promulgated by an association, where the idea behind those laws is to seek a uniform standard across the country, because there is a lack of uniformity in this type of legislation. So I am not personally not familiar with any specific reference to a state law, other than the fact that all of Alaska law is based on Oregon law, as I'm sure you're all fully aware. And it would not be, as I understand it, inappropriate at all for this legislature to simply adopt by reference. If you wanted to criminalize some act, let's say riding a donkey, you could. And Oregon had a law that said it was against the law to adopt a donkey. You could pass a legislature that simply said, we adopt the Oregon statute that makes it illegal to ride a donkey. And that would not be an unlawful delegation of your authority.
Senator Wilikowski.
No, nothing.
Pass. While we're mulling that over, maybe we can back up to the two other issues that were raised by Ms. Bannister in her memorandum, the interstate commerce issue and the civil penalties issue. As she was speaking, I jotted down a couple of questions, and let's start with the interstate commerce issue. Are you aware of any challenge brought against a self-extinguishing cigarette bill by Altria, PM, or indeed other tobacco companies against one of these bills on the issue of interstate commerce?
Mr. Chairman, I am not aware of any. And in fact, I can state that Altria supports the legislation and will affirmatively represent to this body that it would not challenge any such legislation on interstate commerce grounds.
And on that point, Senator Wilikowski.
Well, would you challenge this legislation on any grounds? I guess second question would be, do you see any federal preemption issues with this legislation?
I can't answer that question. I don't know what my client is thinking, but I can say from my own opinion that given the fact that we are a supporter of this legislation, not only here, but around the country, I can't see that there would be any analysis or any, I in my own mind cannot see where we would challenge this type of law. But I can't speak for Altria because I don't have that question. Maybe Mr. Evans would know better, who's been working on a more consistent basis on that issue. In terms of the preemption...
He's shaking his head as if that would not be something he'd want to jump in on. But go ahead on preemption.
Sure. On the preemption issue, I think you're assuming you're meaning that the regulation in this area would be preempted by federal law?
Yeah, I don't know what the federal law is regarding the manufacturer.
There is no federal law as far as I understand, and therefore there can be no preemption issue. Congress, I think, if it so chose to, could regulate in this area, but since it has not, the states are free to so regulate.
And while we're just running down this list, I think I know what your answer is going to be to civil penalties, but if you just go ahead and put your, at least your company's perspective on the record with respect to the civil penalties, is that something that you'd be challenging as being bordering on criminal or amounting to a criminal fine because of the size and severity of it?
Well, once again, I'll try. I can't say what their point of view on this issue is, but based on my 20 years of experience in this area, I would have to say that I do not see that this would amount to an unlawful criminal sanction, particularly given the strong legislative intent that these be civil penalties, which, of course, is an important factor that any court would look to.
Thank you, Mr. White. Follow-up questions from Mr. White based on his answers to those questions. I don't see any. Senator Olson and Ms. I'm going to try it. Is it Liccioli?
Very good.
It's back to you. My intention is to hold the bill over to a future hearing. I haven't had the chance to look carefully at Mr. White's memorandum, but it looks like the legal issues are, as you know, narrowed down to at least the point where I think the committee is all thinking about those specific items. Do you have any follow-up comments, wrap-up comments, or further observations on the bill?
Actually, I do, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Donald Olson, again, the prime sponsor for this legislation. We've been in contact with a number of manufacturers that are out there, and Ms. Liccioli has been the person that's been the contact person. So she has some information that hasn't been put forth yet, and she'd go ahead and answer the question.
If you put yourself on the record, we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Yes. For the record, my name is Denise Liccioli. I'm staff to Senator Olson. And speaking specifically to the delegation issue, I do not have any kind of legal background, so that is why we intentionally chose to defer to the expertise that exists in this committee to come to that conclusion. But what I can attest to is that in working with all parties from all sides on this issue, it seems that that was pretty important for the manufacturer side to be able to come to the uniformity across all states. And it goes to the issue of lacking a federal law. There is a section in the bill that would preempt the whole thing if a federal law came about, because that is the first choice. But lacking that, having all 50 states try to come to some kind of conclusion to enact better safety, it was important to those who are making and selling cigarettes that they have some kind of uniformity. So again, if you adopt a section of New York as was suggested, and then New York changes, or Connecticut changes, or New Hampshire changes, or Alaska changes some part of it, then they start out being all in the same place and quickly splinter from there. So that's the understanding that I got from the parties that I did. But again, I don't have any legal expertise to add to that.
So this may be a question not so much directed at you as is one of the listeners, but I guess my question is have other states that have passed bills similar to these keyed directly to by reference to the New York state law, or have they taken the path suggested by Senator Wilikowski, which is to grab New York law embedded in the statute and that way make concrete what it is that we're talking about in our own legislation?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Actually, there is, if you follow the website that was referenced before, and I think you all have it in your packets, and if not, I'd be happy to get you whatever information you wanted that way. There is actually a website that has the laws of all the other states that have passed it, as well as model legislation that they have put out there so that states that are considering or deliberating adding a law, they could use that law. And if you read the model legislation and look at what the other states have done, they have essentially all adopted and made reference to the state of New York. At least I believe that all of the past states have done that. The model legislation definitely does it, and does it in a stronger way, I think, than what you have before you. So.
Thank you. Follow-up questions based on that. Senator Olson, is there anything else you'd like to bring to our attention this afternoon?
No, I think as I've brought out, this is a bill that I feel strongly about, partly because of the issues that have been brought up that I've talked about in my own experience. And the only thing that I want to go ahead and say is that the reason I brought it forth is to go ahead and try and make sure it affects those lives that have been negatively affected, and as opposed to some of the concerns that was put forth by one of the committee members having to do with them having to inhale deeply. Those people have made a conscious choice to go ahead and and conduct themselves in that manner while the child that I brought forth in the scenario that I described wasn't there by choice. In fact, was depending on somebody like that to go ahead and protect him. And obviously that wasn't the case, and that's the reason I jumped on this bill right away.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Any other comments from the members of the committee? I don't mean to hold the bill up, but I'd like to read the memo from Mr. White a little more carefully, test one or two of the cases, and then we'll have the bill back up for us as soon as possible. Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing that I'll talk to the prime sponsor after the meeting, too. I mean, this does set up a revenue source, and I know one of the things that it's got a lot of support from the Fire Chiefs Associations and the Statewide Association. One thing that those individuals have been trying to do for a number of years now is come up with a funding source for fire training. And I'm just wondering if this can't be perhaps a part of that. You know, I've got some questions about the department utilizing this money the way they have suggested in their fiscal note and whether that's legitimate or not. But, you know, it's $80,000, $80,000+ per year that perhaps, you know, while it is a Senate bill on the Senate side, there could be something written in here that says, you know, suggested use of the funding. That doesn't mean that, I mean, the Finance Committee would have to appropriate it on a yearly basis, but the money could be accounted for and totaled so that the legislature knows on a yearly basis how much money comes from this source if, in fact, cigarettes are a large source of the fires that the firefighters have to respond to. As I mentioned, I know that the associations have been trying to come up with a funding source similar to what the Police Standards Council has. They tack something onto the tickets that they write, and of course firefighters don't have that mechanism, so that this could be something that would just quantify a potential source of funding that they would have to come to the legislature to make a yearly pitch for, but it could help them with a problem that they've been trying to get an answer to for a long time.
Certainly be glad to go and entertain that suggestion.
Thank you.
Anything else before the committee? Hearing and seeing none, we will adjourn at 2:40.